For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. Today we're going to be talking about treatments for prostate cancer. My guests are undoubted experts in their fields. First up is Professor Henry Wu, Director of Uro-Oncology at the Chris O'Brien Lifehouse and Professor of Surgery at the Sydney Adventist Hospital Clinical School at the University of Sydney. Henry is an expert in robotic prostatectomy, and I spoke with him between patients at his clinic. My second guest is Dr. Amy Tay, a radiation oncologist at the Icon Cancer Centre in Sydney. My initial thought was to combine these conversations into one, but then I realised having both sides of the prostate cancer treatment coin, one after the other, was a better way to have the discussion. First, my conversation with Henry.
Thank you so much for doing this. It's great. You and Amy have written an editorial about the treatment of prostate cancer, which Yes. seems to have been a very hot potato. What evidence is there, or is there any evidence, that surgery versus radiotherapy, is there any evidence for one or the other?
Look, I don't think there's any evidence that surgery or radiotherapy, that either one of them is superior to the other in achieving a good cancer outcome. There's some very poor quality evidence, which unfortunately does get cited, where it appears to show that surgical outcomes are superior to radiotherapy from treatments performed 15 to 25 years ago. But it's incorrect to cite that sort of literature because the type of surgery performed 15 to 25 years ago is very different to what we do today. And likewise, the type of radiotherapy that is delivered today is very different to what was delivered in the past.
You've written largely because we've got some research from Yap and colleagues saying that particularly in men over 45 in New South Wales, they're taking the surgery option twice as often as the radiotherapy option. Do you have a theory about why that is?
There are a number of reasons why men will choose surgery over radiotherapy. And I guess firstly, the initial contact the patient has with a clinician is going to be the urologist.
Yes.
And the urologist does have the opportunity to develop a patient-doctor relationship with that patient early, and they're there from the very beginning of the journey, and the patients tend to gravitate to that opinion. That's my own personal view. That probably has some influence, but it's not the only influence. The other thing is that when we actually look carefully at the pros and cons of surgery versus radiotherapy, I think largely patients are voting with their feet when it comes to the decisions for which type of treatment. Now, perhaps the best evidence for this is there was an excellent study that was published in a journal called Patient Education Counseling, and that was published a couple of years ago. And what the authors did was that they looked at patient choices prior to having a combined clinic with a radiation oncologist and a surgeon, looked at patient preferences following the combined clinic. In that particular study, we had 13 patients who had already made up their mind that they wanted to have a robotic-assisted radical prostatectomy, but following the combined clinic, only one patient changed their mind and decided to have radiotherapy instead. One further patient decided to defer their treatment, and I guess what that patient ultimately chose is not known. So it seems that when patients are given, an explanation of the pros and cons of surgery and radiotherapy in a combined clinic, those who have made up their mind to have surgery are going to persist in that decision.
It's more complicated than just surgery versus radiotherapy, though, isn't it? It's not a complete dichotomy. There's a lot of options within those two groups.
You're absolutely correct. Within surgery, you can have either open surgery or a robotic-assisted radical prostatectomy. And even within those options, they're not necessarily always options, but they're considerations where you may or may not be able to perform what's called nerve-sparing radical prostatectomy. And when you're performing nerve-sparing surgery, you're trying to preserve the cavernosal nerves that are responsible for driving erectile function. The material significance of adverse events from surgery or radiotherapy certainly play a role in the patient's decision-making process. With surgery, the adverse events tend to be early or immediate. And with radiotherapy, there is a potential for adverse events to appear for the very first time, in fact, many years down the track. It doesn't mean that surgery doesn't end up being associated with chronic morbidity. And in particular, the two big ticket items are erectile dysfunction and urinary incontinence. Now, I'd like to make a few comments. Firstly, about erectile dysfunction, we need to put some context into this in that we need to look at the prevalence of erectile dysfunction in the aging male. There's a lot of data which shows us that a good rule of thumb is where we'd say that for men aged in their 50s, about 50% will have some degree of erectile dysfunction that varies from nuisance fruit or profound. And when you get to 60, it's about 60%, 70, about 70%. So therefore, the baseline prevalence of erectile dysfunction is very high. So sometimes there is a much greater significance is made about the impact of erectile dysfunction when there is already a large population of men experiencing this very problem. Urinary incontinence is a very significant source of morbidity for patients who undergo surgery. I think to be truthful, the majority of patients are going to experience some degree of urinary incontinence. But the good thing is that the vast majority of these men are going to experience resolution. It's very important that we don't dwell on the incontinence rates that we used to observe 10, 15, 20 years ago. Things have changed a lot. Now, a lot of my colleagues might attribute the improvement in incontinence outcomes to the fact we're now doing robotic surgery. But I think it's a lot more to it than that. The real reason, in my opinion, as to why we're getting so much better results is that we're just much better at doing the surgery, irrespective of whether it's done open or by a robotic approach. Yeah. We have a much better understanding of the anatomy. And we also have we've also tweaked our approach to the critical dissection areas, in particular down at the apex of the prostate, which is immediately adjacent to the pelvic floor and to the very fragile neuroanatomy in that area.
Now, you and Amy are advocating for multidisciplinary teams and clinics to present patients with all of these choices and all of this information. Is that a prevalent thing now, or is this something that's going to need a change in practice for most urology and radiotherapists?
I wouldn't say that we've actually advocated that, Kate. I think that the best outcomes for patients are going to be when radiation oncologists and urological surgeons work together. What we don't want to see is radiation oncologists in one corner saying that radiation treatment for all newly diagnosed prostate cancer, and likewise surgeons saying surgery for all newly diagnosed prostate cancer. I think that when the situation's fairly straightforward and the patient is very clearly in favour of perhaps surgery and they are a candidate, in the case of radiotherapy, they don't necessarily have to be discussed at multidisciplinary team meetings. The sheer volume of cases would mean that we would have to assign a full day of work every week in order to get through all the prostate cancer cases that exist. What we do need is further discussion on the more complex cases, in particular those with very high-risk prostate cancer and those who might even have very low volume or minimal volume metastatic disease, or in other words, oligometastatic prostate cancer. They're the sorts of cancers that need a multidisciplinary approach and quite often will need not only possibly surgery and radiotherapy, but also systemic treatments. Any surgeon or radiation oncologist who works outside of a multidisciplinary team, setting is not being able to provide the very best options for their patients.
Do we talk to patients enough about salvage options?
The ability to have a salvage treatment option after primary treatment is something that is of material concern to the patient. I think it is important that as clinicians that we do discuss that, because we recognise that, on average, as much as 30% of all patients who undergo a primary treatment, whether it's surgery or radiotherapy, are going to have evidence of disease recurrence, even though it may only be in the form of the PSA reaching a certain threshold. Now, after surgery, the first salvage option that we consider is whether the patient is a candidate for radiotherapy to the prostate bed. What we do know about salvage radiotherapy is that it is a well-established form of treatment, and it's safe and has a very acceptable side effect profile. Now, the situation is a little bit different after radiotherapy as a primary treatment. There is a reluctance from most surgeons to perform salvage radical prostatectomy. Now, technically, I don't think it's that difficult an operation to perform. The real problem is that the vast majority of these patients are going to end up with permanent incontinence. And to even treat that incontinence surgically subsequent to double-barreled treatment with radiotherapy then surgery is extremely difficult, and it tends to be somewhat resistant to successful outcomes. There are other approaches, including treatments such as high-intensity focused ultrasound and cryotherapy, and even additional external beam radiotherapy. Now, these do hold some promise, but the results have been, to some extent, inconsistent, and in their own right have potential serious side effects.
One last question. How important is the registry, and how important is it for clinicians to update that registry and keep it there?
The Prostate Cancer Outcomes Registry is a binational registry. Each state has their own steering committee, and I would disclose that I'm a member of the New South Wales Steering Committee. I'm a strong advocate for participation in the Prostate Cancer Registry. The thing about the registry is that it provides a mechanism of feedback for the clinicians who are submitting their patient data. It's an excellent way of working out whether you're doing what you think you're doing in terms of your patient outcomes. And you also have an opportunity to compare those results with your peers. The other thing about these types of registries is that I think that they provide another source of truth, in that we always think of randomized controlled trials as being the only source of truth medicine. But with this extensive type of registry, it actually tells us what's happening in the real world. There's no exclusion inclusion criteria. They've either got prostate cancer or they don't. And we see the outcomes of treatment, whether it be by surgery or radiotherapy. So the registry provides that feedback on how you are performing as a clinician compared to your peers, but the overall data set provides a real-world assessment of what is actually going on in terms of prostate cancer treatment approaches and also what type of outcomes we're seeing overall. So I think that this is going to be a very important source of truth in what our outcomes are with prostate cancer diagnosis and treatment. As this registry builds, we're going to see some extremely valuable data.
Henry, thank you so much for your time.
I've been chatting today with Professor Henry Wu, Director of Uro-Oncology at the Chris O'Brien Lifehouse. The second half of this podcast is my conversation with radiation oncologist Dr. Amy Tay. Henry and Amy have written an editorial for the MJA, which you can find at mja.com.au. Here's my chat with Amy. Do you think there is evidence for or against one or other, either surgery or radiotherapy, being the preference?
I don't think there's evidence to suggest that one is better than the other. They're both thought to be equivalent treatments, but chosen so that they can be individualized to the individual's need.
You know, we've had a couple of really good studies lately showing that men tend to choose surgery over radiotherapy twice as often or twice as much. Do you have a theory why that might be?
I think there's a lot of anxiety when one's given the big C word. And
yes,
for many people, women included, chop it out. You know, that's the intuitive thing to do. But it's only when they have time to digest, read, talk to people and talk to other specialists that they get to absorb, hey, you know what, prostate cancer is really not that bad after all. Yes, it is bad, but I don't have to reflexly go chop it out.
Yes.
And there are other options. And what is the right option for me? And I think that is the value of giving them, giving patients the time and space to think and decide.
The choice is more sophisticated than just surgery or radiotherapy, isn't it? I mean, there are nuances to that. What are the nuances in terms of radiotherapy?
So from a radiotherapy point of view, there's a few no-nos or a few contraindications or relative contraindications. So if someone has had radiotherapy before in the pelvic area for a bladder cancer or a bowel cancer or some other reason when they were younger, then I would probably not be recommending radiotherapy again, or I would have hesitance about that, because once an organ has been exposed to previous radiotherapy, whilst, you know, with new technology and new studies, we are going back to re-irradiate and we can do it. It is certainly a more risky undertaking.
The other thing Henry and I talked about was the salvage option. He was saying that surgery first followed by radiotherapy, if needed, works well most of the time. But radiotherapy followed by surgery, if needed, is not quite so simple. Is that something you agree with?
I would, yes. So after surgery, we can do radiotherapy, and that's such a well-established treatment. After surgery, if there is PSA rises, if the disease recurs and it's just where it used to be, you know, the leftover roots, if you like, then we can go back and mop it up. And there's multiple studies. It's been effective. There are toxicities, as always, with any treatment, but it is a well-studied group of patients. The toxicity is very much acceptable, and you get many patients, about 90% of patients, they get away with very reasonable bladder and bowel habits that they're quite happy to live with, especially if you can give them a second chance of cure. So that was prostatectomy radiotherapy. Whereas if you have radiotherapy first and the disease recurs, the first question is, can I give radiotherapy again? And that toast analogy comes into play. Yes, there are people who do that. You know, there are trials that have done that, but it is very selective patients. And you do warn patients that if I do this, you have to accept that I can't guarantee that it will all go smoothly, because the organs have been treated once and I don't know how it will go again a second time round. So that's number one. And certainly from a surgery point of view, I'd be guided by Henry and the surgeons, but my understanding from the surgeons is that after radiotherapy, the tissue becomes ischemic and fibrotic.
I read your editorial as advocating for multidisciplinary teams as the best way to go. Henry kind of went, not sure we're advocating for that exactly. How would you describe the recommendation?
Like I said at the beginning, I think there's a benefit for that. I am mindful of resources. So if a single patient diagnosed with prostate cancer saw all the three disciplines, there is some efficiency loss, because someone who really needs to see you has lost that appointment and may have unnecessarily delayed. So we need to manage that somehow. And certainly what we do try to do is discuss case at a multidisciplinary meeting.
Do the two disciplines actually get on pretty well and do well to talk to each other?
From my own experience, I would say that the answer would be yes. I think it's a training thing, and it's what you grew up with. And certainly I grew up with that multidisciplinary, like, you know, I trained at Peter MacCallum, for example, and it was a very multidisciplinary approach. You had actually clinics where the surgeons were there, the radiation oncologist was there, and, you know, everyone was there.
Henry also made the point that a lot of what lay people think about prostate cancer treatment is what happened 15 years ago, that things are so much better now than they were even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, in terms of techniques and accuracy and those kinds of things. That's really made a difference, hasn't it?
With radiotherapy, yes, we have changed a lot. You know, nowadays it's almost routine that you do a CT scan before each treatment. So you see the bladder. You know, where's the bladder every day? Because when I was training, it was based X-ray-based radiotherapy. But nowadays, you know, you're contouring on the CT scan, you're contouring on the MRI scan, you've got the PSMA PET scan, so you're contouring so much more accurately. The planning is now CT-based, and, you know, rather than shoot through four directions of radiotherapy, shoot between the hips and your right, which is so blunt, it's a 360 degrees rotational arc radiotherapy.
Cool.
So basically, you are calculating the radiation dose based on each angle of radiations. And what we have now, you know, in the last year, one of the earliest machines to get this adaptive artificial intelligence-based treatment.
What's next on the agenda in terms of that kind of accuracy? Is it
I think what the where things are heading, if you look at the radiation oncology journals, they're calling flash radiotherapy. So basically now that in the past, I think part of the wisdom of doing radiotherapy over multiple days of treatment is that we were actually giving not more treatment, but gently over a longer period of time.
Right.
But now that we know, we have more confidence that we are getting the dose to where we want and we can more surely avoid the healthy organs, we can then give more in one shot. So that would be things like stereotactic radiotherapy that they're talking about, or hypofractionated radiotherapy. So you have to pick the right patients for the right treatment again, as always.
That's exciting. Mm. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.